to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to an extremely busy installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. So glad you're with us tonight as we come to you live from AM 1380 WLRM studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, and of course, streaming to a live audience from around the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. James Edwards and Keith Alexander. Big show tonight. Got more to talk about than we'll ever have time to do. Richard Spencer of Alternative Right will be with us as our featured guest tonight. He's back during the second hour to talk about the shootings and bombings in Norway. We scratched the surface of that topic last week with Bill Rowland. Now Richard Spencer coming in to provide some cleanup. And a lot of stories in between. I tell you, folks, if you've been to thepoliticalcesspool.org over the course of the last couple of weeks, you will know that there is so much going on out there that you're not going to hear brought up on any other mainstream broadcast entity except our show. No one's talking about these stories, and if they are, they're not coming to you from the right perspective, both literally and figuratively. Keith, you know how busy we are this first hour. My goodness. I know you want to start with a quick word on the debt ceiling. To get things started this evening, we're going to cover this very quickly. Everybody's talking about it. I tell you, I was extremely annoyed when Barack Obama and John Boehner interrupted my viewing of The Bachelorette on Tuesday night. You know, my wife and I were going to see who, Ashley was going to pick, and it's down to the, final three, and, they've already had the hometown dates and everything. If you watch The Bachelorette, you know what I'm talking about, folks. And then I'm sitting there, it's getting good, and then here comes Obama. And followed by Boehner. So they delay the show for an hour. We got to stay up. We got a baby. It's hard to do that kind of stuff. But another thing, Keith, you and I had lunch on the front page of the USA Today, above the flap, front cover USA Today. You got this black woman from Chicago. And there she's the one, this anonymous black woman who's getting a hot dog at a vendor in Chicago. She's the one that the USA Today selects to offer, to serve as the voice for the American citizenry on how the populace feels on the debt ceiling and, all the debate that goes along with that. And she had some very, pithy comments, very intelligent, just get it done. I'm sick of this. Anyway, Keith, what's going on there?
Well, it's the typical skewed reporting that you expect from the leftist news media. The cultural Marxist left has accomplished their long march through the institutions, and the news media in particular is, sold out lock, stock, and barrel to the left. So what can you expect from the left except something like that? Now, the debt ceiling debate is big news. We decided that we couldn't let it go by. This is the weekend before the so-called D-Day, the deadline, the line drawn in the sand, August the 2nd, which will be Tuesday. We've got a couple of comments to make about it. First of all, the Republicans, with their typical ineptitude, have allowed the Democrats, the left, and the Obama administration, which are all synonymous, to play Rumpelstiltskin with them, James. What they're doing is Obama has his arms folded, and he keeps telling the Republicans who keep churning out one after another of these proposals to deal with the debt ceiling crisis, and he tells them, you haven't said the magic word yet, just like Rumpelstiltskin in that old fairy tale that we all heard or read or heard about as children. Why they let him do this when he's the leader of the country? He's the one that's supposed to come up with a debt ceiling proposal that will gain bipartisan support. Of course, I think that Obama has a lot of trouble being bipartisan because he is a dyed-in-the-wool cultural Marxist himself. He was raised on this. It was part of his mother's milk. His mother, his grandparents, basically made sure that this kid didn't have a chance. He was just, from day one, inundated, marinated in hard leftism. And as a result, Bipartisanship is the last thing on his mind, the last inclination that he has. He's never going to be a bipartisan person, and that's part of it. You know, we're now into the third year of the Obama administration, and he hasn't proposed a budget yet. He cannot lead. He's there basically to try to bring down the system. That's, you know, the old Cloward-Piven strategy that we've talked about before, that was devised by two Columbia law professors back in the 1960s. It was reported in Ramparts magazine in 1966, and it was tried by leftists in New York City against the John Lindsay administration, who, heaven, you know, to Betsy, is about as leftist as you could get back then. They basically got every street person, every bum, every black person, every student, everybody they could find that could possibly qualify for welfare, tutored them in how to do it, and brought them before the welfare authorities in New York City with one of these acorn types glowering down at the intake worker to make sure that they got everybody that could possibly be on welfare, and they basically imploded the system. They could not come up with the money to pay this, and New York City went scurrying to the federal government, to the Gerald Ford administration, asking for assistance to pay all of this expanded welfare that they had. Well, and of course, that led to the famous New York Post headline, "Ford to New York, drop dead." Well, that's exactly what Obama is doing. I've heard the report that the SNAP program, which is what we used to call food stamps, has been increased by 40% under his administration. Welfare benefits are just growing like by leaps and bounds. That's what TARP was all about. And we just don't have the money. Now, the debt ceiling, there's a perfect solution to the debt ceiling that you'll never hear any mainstream Republican, nor will you hear any mainstream Democrat, let pass his or her lips, and that is foreign policy expenditures. Why not cut that? And of course, that includes the Department of Defense. It includes the 750 military bases that we have outside of the United States of America throughout the world. What would the founding fathers have thought of that? If you cut back all of those things, brought our troops home from Afghanistan, from Iraq, stopped our covert war against Libya, got all of these troops out, cut off foreign aid, cut off NATO expenditures, closed down those bases, we would not have a debt problem at all. We would have a surplus, not just a balanced budget, but a surplus. But that's the third rail, James. Nobody will touch it. When they talk about the third rail, they're talking about like an electric subway or trolley system where you have the wheels on two rails, and then there's a third rail. If you touch the third rail, you're electrocuted. It's as if, in other words, this is the ultimate taboo. The globalists that really run our government will not permit anyone to speak about that. In fact, the great peacenik Obama, in his State of the Union message, said that he would freeze federal spending everywhere except the Department of Defense. That shows they've gotten to him, James.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Just getting started tonight. Stay tuned for more.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander here in the studio with me. And we were talking about the debt ceiling. Been a long time since 1835. I believe that was the year that President Andrew Jackson, last paid down the national debt. Last time it was paid down, 1835. And of course, he was the bane of the bankers. That's what they called Andrew Jackson, a good Tennessean. You know, Tennessee, the home of Andrew Jackson, Davy Crockett, Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels.
Sam Houston, too, is what I said. Andrew Jackson knew the importance of banking. One of his primary goals as president was to end the Bank of the United States, which he did. Of course, our equivalent today would be ending the Federal Reserve System. And, of course, basically what the Federal Reserve System is, essentially, is an reincarnation of the Bank of the United States. Now, you were going to talk about Rosa Parks. Apparently, Rosa Parks has come back. Rosa Parks has come back from the grave to haunt us.
Rosa Parks, okay. As if it were a scene from a fictional movie, A Time to Kill, for instance, Rosa Parks is now alleging from beyond the grave that she was the victim of an attempted rape by her white neighbor. All of the major news outlets are covering this. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, you name it, the AP. Here's the story from the Associated Press, and I'm reading it verbatim. These are their words, of course, not mine. Long before Rosa Parks was hailed as the mother of the civil rights movement, she wrote a detailed and harrowing account of nearly being raped, mind you, by a white neighbor who employed her as a housekeeper in 1931. The six-page essay written in her own hand many years after the incident is among thousands of her personal items currently residing in the Manhattan warehouse and cramped offices of Gersney's Auctioneers. Civil rights historian Danielle McGuire said she had never before heard of the attempted rape of Parks. Oh, surprise, surprise there, Keith, and called the find astounding. It helps explain what triggered Parks' lifelong campaign against the ritualistic rape of black women by white men. And here's again, they're basing this all, she never mentioned this while she was alive. She never mentioned it in her autobiography, but now 6 years after she died and a week before the Martin Luther King, you know, monstrosity is unveiled on the National Mall, all of a sudden this stuff comes out. And they're basing it on this handwritten essay. And here's what Rosa Parks said about her attempted rape. And I quote, and this is what they're basing the whole thing on, Keith. He offered me a drink of whiskey, which I promptly and vehemently refused because, you know, black people don't like to drink. He moved nearer to me and put his hand on my waist. I was very frightened by now. He liked me. He didn't want me to be lonely and would be sweet to me. He had money. And he gave it to me for accepting his attentions. I was ready to die, but give my consent? Never. 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 That's it. Keith, that is it. That is what they are calling attempted rape, supposedly. And they never mentioned this guy's name. They never identify him by name, you know, because he didn't exist, because this is a fake hoax.
Mr. Charlie.
Yeah, the only way he's identified is she calls him Mr. Charlie. So that's convenient. So you can never pinpoint who did this. I'm sure he'd probably be dead by now, but nevertheless, Mr. Charlie was the one who did it. And all of the news agencies are saying the attempted rape of Rosa Parks just uncovered. Her white neighbor attempted to rape her. What are they saying he did? And that was the end-all be-all of the accounting, Keith. He offered her, allegedly. Let's just take it at face value and say this is true. This is attempted rape now. You offer someone a glass of alcohol and you put your hand on their waist. How many guys in a bar have offered a woman a drink and then tried to get touchy-feely to see, you know, if they could move forward? I must have been guilty of attempted rape 150 times, you know, in my single years if that constitutes attempted rape. Now, I mean, this is, folks, Keith, take it, you know, first of all, I got to say one more thing. Again, she never mentioned this during her life because, again, it never happened. The letter doesn't turn up until 6 years after her death and a week before the MLK statue is unveiled. Mr. Charlie, that's the attempted rapist. Who knows who that was? But, you know, one glaring fact, white on black rape happens so rarely that it doesn't even show up in statistical data compiled by the United States Department of Justice. In the United States in 2005, 37,460 white females were sexually assaulted or raped by a black man. In 2005, nearly 40,000 black-on-white rapes. While between 0 and 10, black females were sexually assaulted or raped by a white man. Again, Keith, that's according to the United States Department of Justice. 40,000 to 10 or less black-on-white versus white-on-black. But by God, Rosa Parks was attemptedly, you know, she almost got raped by Mr. Charlie, who offered her a glass of whiskey.
You know,
they're reporting this as fact. I mean, they are reporting this as fact, saying, oh, my God, she was almost raped, that poor thing.
The left just won't give up on this one. You know, the more fantastic the story, it's George Orwell's big lie. George Orwell said, if you're going to lie to the people, don't bother with little lies. Don't try to lace truth into your lie. Pick the biggest lie that you can. You have more prospects of having that believed than the little lies, you know. And apparently this is what the left insists upon doing. There is this great crisis, what they call it, the ritual rape of black women by white men. Now, where do they get that? I guess from the fact that there seems to be some cream in the coffee, as George Jefferson said, that most black Americans seem to have some white blood in them. Let me make a modest proposal, as Jonathan Swift did. Maybe that's because black women welcomed the advances of the very few white men back in the day that found them attractive and went after them. Now, this black rape, white-on-black rape, as James said, according to statistical evidence, don't take our word for it, don't take any group's word for it, look to actual government crime statistics compiled by the Department of Justice. Less than 10 is almost invariably the number that comes back reported year after year after year from the Department of Justice. What this means is that the actual number may very well be zero. Less than 10 incidents won't register on their database, won't register in their computer.
Whereas 35,000 equals 100 a day, black on white.
Yeah, and as James said, the number of black on white rapes is over 100 a day. Now, that's never mentioned. That's never brought up. You never see anybody focusing on the trauma and the emotional turmoil and the pain that is caused to white people and to white women by black rapists. But now we have this totally fictional, invented incident that is taking center stage. Now, first of all, remember one thing about Rosa Parks. She was an inveterate and pathological liar. The whole Montgomery bus boycott and the incident that led up to it was a planned, set-up job. She was not, as I've heard her described numerous times, and I was talking about a sermon that I heard in church.
Mueling Briars.
Yeah, here's what she was doing. She was actually not a poor, humble but lovable seamstress. She was the head of the Montgomery, Alabama chapter of the NAACP. As such, she was chosen by the NAACP's national leadership to be the guinea pig, to be the test case.
Well, she was actually, you know, one of several girls. She was just the finalist.
Yeah, not to interrupt, Keith, but Rosa Parks was actually, you know, fourth or fifth or sixth in the line of staged people, you know, going in to purposefully get arrested on the bus. Several others turned out to be malcontents, you know, illegally or not illegally, but, you know, they were pregnant, right? All this other stuff. So she was the. Well, we got to take a break. There's our music. Keith wrestling me for the microphone. I got to fight him off. We got to take a break. We're coming back. We're going to have a cage match when we come back. Anyway, I got to fight over that mic. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to continue on with Rosa Parks right after this.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. All right, everybody. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, talking about Rosa Parks. And again, just to recap, you know, the mainstream media, Keith, the so-called mainstream media, and I'm talking about all the alphabet soup television affiliates, television networks, I should say, all the papers, the AP, you name it, they are falling head over heels to report this story that is being spawned by a letter that was found 6 years after the death of Rosa Parks, allegedly written in her own hand, that describes the quote-unquote attempted rape of this woman in 1931 by her white employer. And the hoaxers in these media organizations are justifying this claim, as I said, with these handwritten notes allegedly made by Parks. In them, she claims that the guy that was paying her
once made an inappropriate sexual advance. He backs off when Parks tells him to stop. Parks never actually claimed any violence or attempted rape took place, but the media still is calling this nearly raped. With white women being raped hourly in violent attacks by black men, the AP should be ashamed of themselves for pushing this anti-white fabrication. Compare this, Keith, to an actual violent attack that took place against Parks in 1994. She was beaten and robbed by a black male. The only time in Rosa Parks' life when she was the victim of a violent crime, it was at the hands of a black man. Now, why doesn't the media talk about this? Why aren't they inventing a fake attempted rape by a white man when a black man committed the only actual violent occurrence that ever took place against her? Keith, back over to you. Rosa Parks nearly raped, and isn't it a coincidence that it comes out, this big story, national news, a week before the MLK unveiling of his statue?
The reason they're doing it, James, is because the left is not afraid of the big lie. They're going to tell the big lie. They're going to push the big lie. The big lie is that white men are responsible for raping black women. First of all, we've shown the Department of Justice statistics show that that is not the case. That's why whenever you hear of a white-on-black rape, it's almost invariably going to be a hoax, like the Tawana Brawley affair promoted by that great fountain of truth and virtue, Al Sharpton, the Reverend Al Sharpton. Or you hear about the Duke LaCrosse so-called rape, which turns out to be a total and complete fabrication. I would imagine that if there ever is a so-called white-on-black rape, it's usually going to be some type of black prostitute that was unsatisfied with what she was paid for her services by some one of her johns, and as a result she reports this as a rape to the authorities, and it eventually comes out in the wash that it was anything but a rape. Of course, this so-called rape is nothing more at the worst than a failed seduction. It reminds me of Chris Rock's comment that he was famous for making, that sexual harassment is when an ugly man asks you for a date. That's apparently the long and the short of it with Rosa Parks. Now, Rosa Parks was a liar. She was involved in barratry. The Montgomery bus boycott was caused, and what was dreamt up by the NAACP national leadership. They picked her as the poster girl for this. They sent her to the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee, to be briefed and trained on how to behave. They had a setup with the bus driver who was in on it. The arresting police officer was in on it. Everybody's done that. Yeah, and the photograph, the iconic photograph, was all set up. Now, they had tried before just to allow this to happen in the normal course of events, but unfortunately, that didn't work out for them. They'd been waiting for almost a year before, and they had several incidents where somebody, some black person, was asked to go to the back of the bus, but the people that actually complained and would have been in a position to be an authentic complainant in a prosecution about this law happened to be people like this 15-year-old unwed mother who was had a propensity for profane utterances. That was one of the people that came before her, and they decided they weren't going to press that case because this person would not elicit the sympathy up north that they were looking for. So they basically decided to do what is called in the realm of legal ethics barratry. That's a cooked up lawsuit, just like if somebody, for example, slams on the brakes of their car and allows another car to run in the back of them, and the guy that's in the car in back is in the know on this, and they're trying to create a phony personal injury case, just like Walter Matthau's movie from the 60s, The Fortune Cookie. Well, this is the same thing. This is barratry. But, of course, there's a U.S. Supreme Court case called Button versus U.S. in which the U.S. Supreme Court, the Warren Court, the infamous Warren Court, the Warren Court that gave us Brown and all of these other cultural Marxist decisions that transformed America and cemented in the history the infamy of the power of judicial review, they said that, well, barratry doesn't count when it's the civil rights movement. Now, And really, that's the long and the short of the decision, basically, in Button versus U.S. So Rosa Parks was just a player. She was a pawn, and she was a willing participant in basically manipulating the court system in the Montgomery bus boycott. The reason they wanted the Montgomery bus case to go up, or a bus case to go up, is because the primary authority they were trying to challenge and have directly overruled was Plessy versus Ferguson, which was another public transportation segregation case. It involved segregated rail cars on a railroad. So there wasn't a whole lot of rail traffic back then. So instead, they decided they would focus on another common carrier, the bus lines, and they would challenge that and thereby have the exact same type of case as the Plessy versus Ferguson case. Now, in closing, James, let me say this, that if this is what engendered this great hatred of white people that they're suggesting resided in the heart and soul of Rosa Parks, you know, there may be a kernel of truth in that, because basically, if you look back at the history of the Black Rights Movement and the Civil Rights Movement, there have been a lot of deeply neurotic, if not absolutely psychotic, people involved in it, from John Brown to Sojourner Truth to Harriet Tubman to Frederick Douglass to a real rapist named Michael King, who the world knows as Martin Luther King. The FBI files on this man were sealed right before they announced his birthday was going to be this national holiday. And it was done because the FBI had been tailing him, had secret wires out on him and whatnot, and they caught him doing things like running naked after a white prostitute in Norway at the hotel that he had gone to accept the Nobel Peace Prize, where he's hollering, "I'm going to be a white man tonight, and I'm effing for Jesus." Okay, now that you know, if that's not a sick individual, if that's that's a real rape story. But of course, that's a rape story that doesn't fit the larger motivation of the left. So that is suppressed. That never comes out. Meanwhile, you have this kind of pathetic seduction story, which is probably made up, maybe a hoax, maybe a fabrication, maybe a forgery, who knows. But even if it's true, it's not a rape, as James said. Basically, it falls into Chris Rock's idea of sexual harassment being sexual harassment is when an ugly guy asks you for a date. Well, that's all this is. And they're trying to turn this into, front page news that, pushes everything else out, trying again to inflict guilt upon white people as if our ancestors were up here, raping black women, six ways from last week. And it's obvious that human nature doesn't change that much. If there are less than 10 white on black rapes, according to the Department of Justice today.
It's been one of the 10.
Yeah, it's so unusual, it doesn't deserve speaking about. What really deserves to be focused on is the epidemic of black on white rapes that continues unabated in America, and nothing is done to protect the victims of those rapes, James.
Well, Keith, I think we have given more truth about this story than the entire national media combined. And you got it in 20 minutes or less here on the Political Cesspool Radio program. Hey, that's what we do, folks. That's what we do every Saturday night. I mean, we've got to set the record straight, speaking truth to power and all that good stuff. One more segment forthcoming with Keith Alexander this first hour. We're going to talk about a little movie coming out that really ties in with what Rosa Parks is saying 6 years after she died happened to her. Stay tuned. We'll tell you all about it.
Well, Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, unlike the radical left media, who is still taking advantage of Rosa Parks, even post-mortem, we're going to let her go back to rest now, and we're going to move on to another topic. But a related topic. Keith, a new movie is coming out. Big motion picture release starring Emma Stone, a good daughter of Israel, who has been featured in movies such as Zombieland and Easy A. She stars in this movie called The Help. And as we just learned, Rosa Parks was nearly raped by her white employer when she was working for him as a housekeeper. Keith, tell them about this major motion picture release coming out next month, The Help. What's it all about?
Well, The Help was a book written by some Southern society dame where she basically is trying to look at the upper crust, the country club set in some mythical Southern town, which supposedly is based on Jackson, Mississippi, through the eyes of the so-called help. In other words, these poor, unfortunate black people that were made to serve these white people who are their moral inferiors, their intellectual inferiors, and their ethical inferiors in every way. That's the way it's all portrayed. And, of course, that's why somebody like Emma Stone and the Jews who run Hollywood went gaga over this. See, that there's a formula that you have to have in order to pitch yourself to the people that control the entertainment industry, just like there's a certain template that they want to use in the news media all the time, and it's an anti-white, anti-American founding stock template. They're going to pretend just, you know, that basically reality is inverse, a total inversion of reality. You know, black people are the wise and smart and restrained ones. White people are these goofy, out of control, driven by their emotion, driven by their lust, driven by their all these bad instincts, and they need. And black people are watching them and reporting on them, and all of their foibles are brought up in this book, The Help. See, it's just like John Grisham. John Grisham's first book was A Time to Kill, which is based on, again, the totally fictional idea that white guys go around raping black girls with regularity, and particularly they did so back in the bad old days of segregation. Of course, human nature doesn't change over time that drastically, so I count me as one who's dubious about the premise of that book. John Grisham, a Southern white guy, decided that that was the best way to pitch his... and a state legislator from Mississippi. He's the one who decided to write this total fantasy because he had a gut instinct about what would ring the chimes of those Jews that were running the book publishing industry in America, places like Random House, like Parthenon, like Athenaeum, and all these other big publishing houses, and that's who he was trying to sell it to. And that's how he got his nose in, or his foot in the door in publishing. And, of course, he's gone on to make money churning out these formulaic legal thrillers ever since then. Well, this lady that's writing The Help apparently knows what is going to ring the chimes of the people that run the ultra-left that run the movie industries. Of course, you know, we pointed this out before. There are 8 major movie studios. Every one of them has a CEO. There was an article in some Hollywood newspaper recently where a Jewish guy said they want to keep this under wraps. We ought to be bragging about it. We ought to be very proud as Jewish people that we are the people that have risen to the top.
Tell them the only problem with Jewish people.
The only problem with Jewish people that we have is that they are the most liberal segment of the white population. They tend to vote 80%, 4 out of 5, for the Democratic candidate for president in every presidential election. And of the 20% that don't, at least half of those people tend to vote for candidates even further to the left than the Democratic candidate, such as Ralph Nader or the perennial American Communist Party candidate. Now, why is that important? Well, basically what Jews brought to America when they started to come in large numbers during what's called the second great wave of immigration in America from 1890 to 1920, they brought hard left politics, anarchism, and Marxism. And quite frankly, none of these liberal movements that basically bedevil America today, like radical feminism, homosexual rights, criminal rights, the black civil rights movement, radical environmentalism, the sexual revolution, the drug culture, none of these would have gained any traction without Jewish power and influence, without Jewish money, intelligence, organizational skill. You know, the other thing about Jews is that they are the most intelligent group of people, according to statistical evidence. You know, we're willing to give the devil his due. They have an average IQ of around 109. Average white people have 100. So they are also exceptionally rich. There is this compilation called the Forbes 400 Richest Americans. Over a third of these, 135, are undisputably people of Jewish origin.
And what's their portion of the population?
And they're 2% of the population. So, and furthermore, this 2% of the population also makes up more than 50% of the membership in the American Civil Liberties Union, the infamous ACLU. And then also, they used to be the people in charge of the NAACP until the early 70s when some black power advocates drove them out. And once the Jews were driven out, quite frankly, the NAACP became a paper tiger. All that you heard about with the NAACP was an occasional money embezzlement embarrassment going on or some type of sexual harassment lawsuit. Now, just like Rosa Parks, this Help movie is being promoted for the purpose of creating a totally false and almost inverted reality situation where white people are lustful, lecherous, rapists, criminally inclined,
terrible mothers,
neglectful parents, spendthrifts, yada, 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 everything negative, which basically is an inversion of reality. But see, when things come across the silver screen, they particularly have an effect on the young. As it's been said before by William Lind, who is a famous conservative that we've had on this show numerous times, this seems real to the young, more real than the world outside the front door. If they see that white people are bad, can't control their emotions, and that black people are these paragons of moral virtue, just like so-called Rosa Parks was. You know, she was, you know, of course, we know that black women are incredibly chaste. Of course, you know, and I don't know what horrible thing is causing them to have the highest illegitimacy rate in America. But it must be whites raping blacks, James.
I got to say one more thing about this movie, The Help. I watched a 2020 interview on this movie with my wife. We were actually out of town in Hot Springs when it came on. This was a couple of weeks ago. I was up there for a short family weekend vacation and to meet a good friend. But the premise of this movie is that the author who wrote the book wrote it almost as an autobiography. She was the daughter of a set of parents who hired a black housekeeper. I mean, God forbid you hire a black person to do a job and pay them to do it. You know, I guess that's the modern day slavery, to pay them to do a job. They should be paid to do nothing. Anyway, so according to this book, all of the white parents were racists, of course, and they were, you know, absentee parents to begin with, and neglectful, and the black help, you know, raised the kids and taught them virtues and how to be good people and grow up to be, you know, strong adults and this, that, and the other. And I watched the author of this book say, you know, how embarrassing. I thought nothing of it at the time, but oh, I have so much remorse now that we hired this dear lady to work in our home. And all of this stuff, Keith, you know, and it's coming out. This is just, it's, you know, Django Unchained, the movie we talked about a couple of weeks ago that glorifies just the sadistic butchering and killing of white people. You know, that caters to that audience. This is just the sappy anti-white movie vis-a-vis the sadistic Django.
And to appeal to the women, okay? Soft-hearted women that are, you know, the
white. They should have been working for the blacks.
Yeah, the infliction of white guilt is almost complete now. That, you know, white people are all going to, you know, like a bunch of lemmings, commit Harry Carey by jumping over the cliff if the left has its way. And, you know, probably this author, this or authoress, if you will, probably will discover that her father raped the black help, you know, a la Rosa Parks or whatnot, you know.
60 years from now.
And see, this is the type of thing that this fits in neatly with another hard leftist movement, radical feminism. They have all these psychologists, particularly women psychologists, throughout the nation that when some poor, disturbed woman, particularly a white woman, shows up seeking psychoanalysis, they sick them on their daddies or their brothers and say, the reason you have so many problems in life is because you are actually raped by your father, raped by your brother, this, that, or the other. And they get these weak people to believe all this. Okay, so you've got two left-wing movements working in tandem.
That's all the time we got tonight. I told you it would go by too quickly, and I told you we wouldn't have enough time. And Keith is my witness, that was the truth. But still 2 hours forthcoming tonight. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in a flash.
Hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.